Hi everyone, welcome to Dyslexic Design Thinking, the bigger picture with amazing dyslexics. I'm your host, Gil Gershoni. This episode explores how dyslexia can help us break down boundaries in order to build strong connections. Enjoy. Hey guys.
Hi.
Holly, great to see you guys. Great to see you. How's everybody doing?
Good, really good.
Very well.
Oh, so lovely to see you guys. Dom, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and what is dyslexia means to you in a word or so.
Well, hi, I'm Dom. Dyslexia. Dyslexia is a thing that sits above and around you at all times, but you have to find ways to navigate around it. I think that listening to the introductions, it sits so close to my heart that you have two other people that are in totally different sectors that have gone through very, very similar experiences to myself. And I think this whole thing about having a community is so critical because you need that support structure. There's a thing about dyslexia that can make you feel really isolated. You know, you're in this place where you just don't feel good enough and you think, well, why am I not good enough? And why can I not do these things? I was lucky enough to be diagnosed. I don't think it should be called a diagnosis, really. It's just a difference. But I was told about being dyslexic late primary school, early secondary school. And, you know, I had tests and I had to have psychological, IQ tests at various stages of my early education. And that helped. But what I found frustrating was that the education system just didn't know how to adapt. It didn't know how to kind of embody this difference and allow dyslexic students to be able to do their learning in a different way, I suppose. So I think that from that isolation in school, as you grow up and you become, you know, your own boss, let's say, you find tools and mechanisms to have people around you that can really support you and know that your vision and what you're trying to do is the goal, and all those other bits that you find hard, they can support you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that support is so important to your own identity and building the community, as we're going to talk about today. Hi, Guy.
Hi, Gil.
How's it going? Lovely to see you. Lovely to see you. What does dyslexia mean to you in a word?
Well, I think the word would have to be outsider. You know, I think it contributed to a feeling that I was an outsider, that, the world wasn't quite like for me, like it was for everybody else. I mean, I might have felt like that anyway, but I do think dyslexia was part of it. And how you deal with it, I think, depends very much on your confidence. And I don't know, I was sort of blessed with almost, I think, a kind of arrogance, really, that I wasn't going to let it hold me back. I mean, I didn't know I was dyslexic. I wasn't aware that there was a word for it when I was young. But, you know, I tried to write from right to left and I still can't spell to save my life and all the P's and B's and all that sort of thing. You know, my kids ask me not to read them bedtime stories. But yeah, I mean, and that leads to a feeling of isolation, as Dom said, and you find your way in a different way. But I mean, I am aware that it could so easily have crushed me. You know, if I'd gone to a different school, I went to a fantastic state primary school where it wasn't really until I was 11 and I got to secondary that I really realized, you know, how different it was and what a problem it potentially was. So, that was helpful. And, you know, I grew up on a farm where I was, you know, probably like Dom, you know, loving making things and machinery. And, you know, I learned to weld when I was about 7, I think. And so I was doing all that sort of stuff that didn't really matter about.
I know that a lot of us out there do feel the isolation, but talking about it and bringing ourselves together and sharing, I think it's definitely the first step for a lot of the young folks that are listening today as well. How's it going, Holly? So lovely to see you.
Very nice to see you too. Thank you for having me here.
Of course, of course. Tell me, what is dyslexia to you?
I'm a slightly different to Guy in terms of that I found dyslexia, the word that I would use is exciting. because actually I think that I just wouldn't be who I am today without it. I feel like dyslexia gave me a route in life that was the path less traveled, and it allowed me to work a muscle that I don't think I would have worked if I hadn't have been dyslexic. And that muscle was about connecting with people. I do think that we have a bit of a superpower that we're able to get under the skin of people, because we've had to read people for so long. We've had to maybe see things that other people don't see, because we've had to find a new way of communicating. And we're, you know, full of imposter syndrome, all these sorts of things. So for me, it's led to an exciting world where I've built business through what I feel that I've learned through being dyslexic. Reading people, understanding people, connecting with people. And that's now what I do. You know, my full-time job is basically connecting with people. And my community is my full-time job. So, you know, it's something that's actually very positive in my life, even though it's been, you know, blinking difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, I can relate to the exciting part. I mean, it wasn't my first word, but as I got older and kind of realized the power of dyslexia and how, as you said, reading people, seeing things, understanding non-linear situation, it's such a strength of dyslexics that I think it's really, my word would be really a hyper ability as I learned to sort of hone it, you know. Dom,
I don't think it's a disability. I think I may have given that impression. I really don't think it only becomes a disability if it affects your confidence. I think
I can imagine
within a more conventional educational system, it must be quite hard to avoid that. And I certainly appreciate that. You know, with okay, so I can't write well, you know, and I can't spell, but I can
you
do a lot.
You spell well though. You do write.
Actually just the words come out differently, but you know, word processors were just changed my life. So, but you know, I can see things, those connections, which Holly, you know, mentioned. For me, I'm guessing it may be more like Dom, it tends to be more, you know, physical connections. You know, I can design things in my head and reach conclusions that just take people. I mean, I sit in meetings, talk about that. I'm so bored by how slow it is. You know, they may be able to spell, but my God, they're slow when they're making those connections. And, you know, I can end up either falling asleep or being quite rude because they are so. So, yeah, we're all different, aren't they? You know, it's interesting that it comes out in different ways because, you know, I'm definitely not good at the sort of people angle of it, which sounds like how it's come out with Holly. Me, it's much more to do with shapes and physical things that I feel my superpower, as Gil calls it, you know.
Yeah. No, I think it's a very good point. And it's really about confidence. I mean, Michelle was saying it does affect for little boys' confidence. And we'll talk more about it throughout the show about how do you find your spark and how you find your sort of gift, which I'm looking forward to getting to. Dom, how can we use dyslexia in a unique way to help create community? How do you do that in your world with your team and clients and collaborators?
I think the creation of community is it kind of happens naturally for dyslexics, because it's like I was saying earlier on about you feel like you need a team of people around you. And also, I mean, from a creative perspective, I've always wanted, you know, there is that imposter syndrome that you have. So the more people you have that are like-minded to you and you can discuss and share ideas is really, I think, really important. That kind of feeling of isolation when you're at school, thinking that I've just got this computer and I've got to send stuff out on this computer and that's the only thing, is terrifying. But having a group of people around you where you can say, well, look, do you think that's right? Or is this good? And I've always, it's almost like when I first went to art school, I did a BA in fine art and sculpture. And it was just coming from secondary school, I did a foundation year, and that was just amazing that you could just make stuff. And you know, that's all you had to do. An occasional little essay at the end, but getting to the degree course and just being given a space in a studio, a workshop next door, and say make whatever you want was just the most amazing thing. And wow, having all those other artists around you that are in the same kind of shoes, you're going, well, is this good art? Is it bad art? Do I enjoy this? You know, you question so many things about yourself over that 3-year period. And I loved it. I really loved that sense of community then. And I think I've carried that throughout. It's a bit like I didn't really want it to stop. So, and my first job, I went to my tutor and I said, I think I don't really want to be a sculptor in a shed on my own, chiseling a little bit of marble. I know that. But what I want to be, I don't know. And so he said to me, well, look, they're gonna start a design course on it's a new course next year. Why don't you, see if you can get a job as a technician with them? So I went to the dean of the department and said, can I be the technician? And I had to go through the whole interview process, which was terrifying in itself, and write a little thing, but eventually I got the job. So I went from student to teaching staff, 6 weeks after graduating, which was comforting in one way, but terrifying in the other. But it was just wonderful to suddenly be around another group of people. I had to kind of teach them, but I was learning at the same time. So it was the knock on from that was, once I'd graduated from the RCA several years later, I kind of did the same thing. I set up that same little community where I had a workshop. I knew I couldn't afford a workshop all on my own. So two or three friends from the Royal College said, let's get a space in East London. And we found this amazing building. And we just thought, right, let's share the workshop. We'll have the rest of the space. We'll get some desks made up and we'll rent out desks. I mean, it was literally the first WeWork. And, we had rented desks. People could share the workshop. And that was the beginning of that community. And it just grew. It was lovely.
Yeah. I can very much relate to your story. As we tend, as dyslexic, we tend to actually reinvent, right, and create our own spaces and bring people around. So because we don't fit to the linear sort of structure, And Holly, I know that you do this in so many different ways. How do you bring people into a community? Tell us a little bit about how does that work for you, and how dyslexia helps that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think dyslexia helps it happen for what I said earlier, because I have become a people person. So I can't, the things that I can't do, I can do when it comes to people. And so very much what you were just saying about you invent your own ways. And I suppose that has led me to love being an entrepreneur, and that's what I do. And I build what other people don't see. I build connection and community. So my first business, Not on the High Street. Now I look back, this is 16 years on, but now I look back, basically I was bringing together a whole heap of people who didn't sort of fit in. They all were small businesses, they were making their own products, and they'd been kicked off the high street, or they weren't on the high street. And actually they were the underdogs. And actually that's, some people ask me, what is that thing? Why are you obsessed with small businesses? And maybe it's because that's what I felt. I felt like I didn't fit in. I felt like I wasn't going to ever fit in. And actually, so what I did was then realize I wanted to find a way of connecting all those people together. And that's what I did with Not on the High Street, connected 5,000 small businesses who, I haven't done a poll, but I will bet that a large amount of these wonderful people are dyslexic. Just like my podcast, Conversations of Inspiration, where I had the pleasure of interviewing Guy, it was unbelievable how many successful entrepreneurs are dyslexic.
Asking that question, keep asking it, because it's so interesting for everyone to know. And this is what we need to do, just get the message out there. So you're doing a great job with that.
Yeah, well, sorry, I missed the first bit you just said.
But the fact you're asking that question to everybody is brilliant.
Yes, absolutely. Because quite frankly, I have children. I have my business, Holly & Co. And one aspect of it is we have a physical space. And these children come in, and maybe their mothers have told the kids that I am dyslexic. And it's one of my greatest pleasures to talk about, tell me why it's your superpower. And you giving them some language to use around it, and being highly proud and open and honest about it. And I think that that's what we have got to do. It's why I actually think your book was absolutely phenomenal, because it is, you know, it was a way of really opening up. And the amount of kids and teenagers I know personally that have that book, it's created the conversation at home. And it's just, yeah, it's fantastic.
I do feel like there's a bit of a tide at the moment, I must say. You know, in terms of, I've always kind of been proud of being able to say I'm dyslexic, but I feel like it's even easier in the last probably 5 or maybe 7 years. I think the tide is switching where people are starting, the wider community, not the dyslexics, are starting to think, yeah, you know, there is definitely a superpower there. There is something different, and there is a place to encourage and a place to explore how, and I hope, that education structures can change to accommodate that. I mean, I've got a 13-year-old son, and I was always questioning whether he was going to be dyslexic, and I'll say, where he's not, I was a little bit disappointed. But a father friend of mine, his son was very dyslexic, and you know, the primary schools didn't have the facilities to really, you know, encourage him, and that was very sad to think that you've got to find another institution to really bring out the best in children. But I do, I'm hoping that it is changing.
Yeah. I mean, I really hope that this is a move towards us just appreciating diversity, you know, and, you know, we talk about dyslexia, and, you know, it's fantastic that Greta Thunberg is making a strength out of her autism, you know, and that, you know, and which was viewed as being, you know, just 100% negative and pretty badly negative, certainly, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, I employed, you know, well, I work with two people who are really quite autistic, and, you know, within a team, you know, God, I wouldn't leave them to make important decisions on their own. But as part of a team, they really contribute and are absolutely fantastic at some things. So, yeah, you know, it is that just appreciation of diversity, whether it is, you know, most obviously, you know, I guess, gender and race, but you know, I think it extends to lots of other things as well, and if we can appreciate that, we'll all live richer lives.
Absolutely. Well said. What role, Guy, do you play in so many communities and projects and businesses you're involved in? What role do you play in that? How do you see
that? I've been interesting listening to you all on this, because actually I think I'm pretty crap at it. I've done what I've, you know, being an outsider, I suppose, because I haven't fitted into other communities. I haven't liked the way that businesses are run. I haven't liked the way that my neighbors have farmed. And I've never really felt part of the communities that I've founded, perhaps. You know, I started a cooperative 25 years ago. I say I started it because that is really the truth. You know, 10 farmers came together, but I dragged them together and pretty much dictated, and 2 years after it started, they voted me off because I was so bad at kind of collaborating. And in some ways, I feel, you know, with Riverford after 30 years, I haven't left, and I don't think anyone wants me to leave, customers, staff, or co-owners or suppliers. But I have kind of left. I've moved up to a farm 2 miles up the valley, where I'm starting doing my own thing again. You know, and so I don't really feel that it's something that I don't massively like about myself. I would much rather be sort of part of the team. But so I think I have quite a different perspective on it to the rest of.
And I was just going to say, do you think you come at it from a different perspective? Do you think that's what's made it successful in a way?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I really value community. I just think doing things together, you know, is, you know, I always, when I sign our books, I always sign it, you know, Guy Sing Watson, Stronger Together, or Together We Can Change the World. Together is written into the founding articles of Riverford. So it's not that I don't value it, I'm just not very good at it, you know. So I don't, you know, and I, in many ways, I admire the people who are, and I have recognized that as a weakness, I suppose, and surrounded myself, which I think in business you have to do, recognize what you're, well, probably in everything, you know, what you're not so good at, and try and find other people who can, you know, fill in the gaps that you leave. And I've been lucky to find those people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sounds that, you know, good or not, it sounds that your success and ability to see those 40 farmers, drag them together, create other businesses, is the ability of dyslexia. You can see non-related things and bring them together and help them thrive. And definitely. I know that, you know, as you said before, Guy, you know, it takes all of us, and it's really about the diversity and different types of thinking that makes it work, right? If it was only a group of dyslexic, if it was only a group of non-dyslexic, but together we're able to make it work for each other. So see the big picture
And I think in the history of an organization, there are stages at which different character traits are more important. So if a founder says getting it going, you know, being very innovative, being able to quickly see those connections and so on, that's something that I was definitely very good at. You know, as it matures and you need more kind of completer finishers who are more interested in, who are probably more patient in their approach and they're better at improvement rather than, you know, initiation, you know, that's when I step aside because I've got the attention span of a flea and let someone else, you know, do that. And, you know, so I just think it's important to recognize, well, I say it again, recognize what you're good at and to appreciate that we all bring different things. So it's that kind of diversity thing again.
And all very, very passionate about what you do as well, aren't you? All of you.
Yeah, completely. I think you have to have that passion. And I was just listening to Guy then. It's interesting about, I mean, I don't think, as much as I'd love to be able to step aside and let everybody take over, I don't think I could. However, it's interesting because the attention span thing is really, really interesting. And I think it's something that it can really affect younger kids that have dyslexia. I mean, my business partner here, she's constantly saying, "Dom, where are you? Come back. We've got to do this. We've got to finish this pricing. We've got to do this." And I'm off talking to one of the carpenters about something completely random. Or, you know, over a weekend, I'll have a different idea and I'll come in on Monday and go, "What about this?" And she's like, "Can we just focus on what we're doing?" And it's like, she's Lexi, she's called, she's like my voice of reason. And I'm kind of the visionary of, "Let's do this, let's do that." And she just kind of brings me back down and says, "Right, this is what we're focusing on." And even down to this building we've got here, this building is 35,000 square foot of factory space. And I was looking for a new space and I drove past it. I thought, "Wow, that's amazing." And I took photos of it and I went down and said, "Look at this mate." And she's like, "Are you nuts? We only need 6,000 square foot. Why would we take a building the size of a college?" And I just had this idea. And I thought, "No, it's going to be great." And, you know, we pushed, we spoke to the people that owned it. And, you know, we had this whole concept of creating this community and subletting out all the different spaces. And now it's just a thriving space. We've got ceramics workshops upstairs. We've got a sourdough bakery. We've got our own little cafe. And we've got our space where we do the furniture. And it's like, it's another one of those kind of things where you're always thinking about the next thing or how can I do this over there? And I think if anything, I'd probably be more successful if I just focused on one thing, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of our guests is asking, have you guys felt vulnerable due to your dyslexia? And I know a lot of dyslexic feel or have the imposter syndrome, you know. So Holly, how do you work around those feelings to connect with others? How do you work with that vulnerability and find your spark?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, we've been talking a lot about imposter syndrome with International Women's Day and it being quite a female trait. I am not the greatest fan of this word, I have to say. I think an imposter means that you're not welcome, you shouldn't be there. And a syndrome, again, you know, as we've just been speaking, I don't like this sort of idea that, like Dom says, it's sort of, you know, you get diagnosed or it's a syndrome. I just think these words just aren't very helpful. And we've got to remember that really what imposter syndrome means is, I think, a momentary lack of knowledge. You know, it's, you know, the imposter syndrome it's not like you are you, and then there's this other parallel version, Stephen Hawking's sort of string theory, you know, that sits here, and actually that's really the real you. And you have this sort of tussle between the two of you, you know, who's the real you? Well, you are just you. You have these days where you do know a lot about some information. And I feel like the imposter syndrome is that space in between sort of you knowing what you're talking about and not knowing necessarily what you're talking about. And so I really feel that we have to start to reframe all of this. And it's something that I talked to my young about as well, which is that I don't have imposter syndrome right now. That's a weak spot for me, or I'm super excited to learn about that. That's something I've not tackled before. Now, aren't you brilliant at it? Could you help me? Or I'm excited to understand this. And I think we've got to start to reframe from this sort of, I've got imposter syndrome, somehow I'm, you know, it's going to follow me forever. You know, this is a syndrome that I now have in everything that I do, to actually just pinpointing, this is an area that I need to work on. And I think that we can, especially, I don't know about necessarily men, but from what I've worked with female founders, we can label ourselves with things. And so I think that the imposter syndrome is something, it's great that we say it and that we, you know, acknowledge it. But I do think that there is just, what it really is just that in-betweenness between what you are and who you know and what you smash. Brilliant, you're that's what you do. You know, I do small businesses. But if I go into another situation and someone talks, let's say I talked about, you know, guy farming, you know, there is nothing I know about farming. You know, do I have imposter syndrome or do I just have a lack of knowledge in something? And and so I think that that's a really important distinction, especially for women, to stop labeling ourselves necessarily.
Yeah. There's been a great thread running through the chat, which I just noticed while listening there, about doing stuff defiantly. I love that. You know, I mean, yeah, is, you know, I'm not an imposter. I'm being defiant. You know, I think that's a great way of looking at it.
Yeah. Or is it just that?
I heard that.
Sorry,
go ahead, Dom.
Sorry, say again.
No, go ahead.
I was just the imposter syndrome. When I heard that expression, I know what you're saying, Holly, but I think I was really relieved to kind of have a tag. Like, okay, I'm imposter syndrome. That is actually describes how I feel, and I've tracked it back to just having confidence shattered at a really young age. You know, so you just. I mean, I remember my geography teacher telling me that there's just no point me doing the exam because I wasn't going to pass. So just, you know, kind of go home. And those vital years where you are told that you're not good enough and you know that you are, it causes such a conflict. And that's when you're presented in the professional world, you've still got that behind you thinking, am I not good enough? You know, am I not? And that's where I think the imposter syndrome comes from. And actually, once I heard that expression, I was like, yeah, that describes how I feel. I don't think I'm an imposter anymore. In fact, I'm an expert. And I've started celebrating the fact that I'm an expert in certain things and I'm not good at other things. And it's okay to not be good at other things, which is why you build structures and frameworks around you to deliver what you need. It's this whole, I saw some stuff in the feed about right brain, you know, education systems need to start recognizing there are right brain people and there are left brain people, and they take in information and they give out information in different ways. I mean, computers have transformed the ability to be able to communicate, because that's what it's about, being able to communicate. If you can't read, you can't get the information in, and if you can't write, you can't get the information out. It doesn't mean you don't know. And that, I feel, in later life, is what gives you that imposter syndrome. I shouldn't be here because I'm not good enough. And that's truly wrong. And you're right, it certainly shouldn't be a syndrome.
Yes, yeah. Well said.
Yeah. Yeah, I can relate.
I went to five secondary schools, and each one of them was so similar. You know, I travelled. We moved to Scotland when I was young, and so I went from a state school, which was horrific. I was very lucky to spend 2 years in a specialist dyslexic school. It was called Brickwall House at the time in Northam. It's now called Renfrew House, and still specialises in dyslexic teaching. And that was a really amazing period of my life. And then I went, we moved to Scotland, and that was a whole world of change. And that's where a lot of anxiety occurred, you know, because they just didn't want to even enter the conversation of dyslexia. So anyway.
Yeah. I can relate to those feelings, and I know a lot of people in the chat are sort of resonates with them as well, is that it's something that seems so basic, right, that you can't do and the rest of your peers, if it's at work or if it's at school, can do. And obviously dyslexics, it's not an IQ thing. It's just that it's hard to see the linear story because we always want to see the three-dimensional of it all. One of the things that I know that Holly, you're talking about is how do you find your spark? How do you find your how do you find what is in you that you can shine the light on that? Would you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one to describe, I must say, but it is probably, if I have to think about my consistent golden thread in my world, my businesses, it's exactly that. It is finding your unique diamond. And I believe that, you know, when we think about that, we have, what is it, 1 in 400 trillion chances of being born. On my 40th birthday, I worked out that we have roughly 29,000 days on this planet. And actually on my 40th birthday, I'd actually only got 14,000 days left. With that knowledge, knowing I was highly unique to be here in the first place, but time was running out, you know, I knew inside of me what my diamond was, what my uniqueness was. I didn't when I was 20, you know, this is what you get with maybe age. And I realized that I had a superpower of connecting with people, reading people, and empowering and inspiring them. That's just my diamond. And I always talk to small businesses. I get asked a lot about, you know, what should they start? How can they start? And I talk to them about what is their diamond. You know, if we all have to have peacock feathers, you know, just one thing, what is your peacock feather moment? You know, what is it that is so unique about you that not one single other human could ever be the same as you about? And we all have it, by the way. There is not one person watching, listening that doesn't have it. And actually what entrepreneurship is, in a way, is finding your diamond and amplifying and commercializing your diamond, building communities around your diamond. And it's a really lovely thing to think about if you haven't ever thought about this or that notion. What is your diamond? And how are you going to nurture it? How are you going to polish it, mine it, shine it, and then basically, you know, shine it against out there in your community? And, you know, I suppose I'm just like a chief miner now. All I do is just go searching for people's diamonds, and it's an absolute pleasure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so beautiful. How lucky are you?
I'm very lucky.
You know, it's like you're sitting with all these amazing individuals and organizations and finding what they, who they are and how help them see it and amplify it. And I know that we do the same thing in our business. You know, it's, you always want to find that thing that often we overlook it because we're sitting right on it and we can't tell that that's my shine or that's my, as you said so beautifully, your feathers. But when you find it, you take it for granted. And then when you find it and you find a way to tell that story and shine a light on it, more of what it is versus what it's not, then really that sort of transformation can occur. And I think that is such a beautiful way you describe it. And I think also for young adults, for young children, it's so often the discord is around what you cannot do. And I think really moving the conversation to what you can do, all of a sudden become that superpower, that confidence that can be built over time. You know, we all talked about the right brain and the left brain, and I think that is, we all have it, and it's something that can really change the educational framework and bring those strengths and gifts to the forefront. What kind of things do you do, Dom, working with your team to sort of find their strengths and differences and sort of amplify that for your team and organization?
Well, I mean, we have a team of creatives here, so but through that door there's a huge workshop with all sorts of machinery and stuff like that. And what I've learned is when you're building a team, it's sometimes not just about how good a person is, but it's about how they feel about doing something for you. And I think that's the most important thing. As you know, I can't do all of the stuff that needs to be done here. I have a vision for what it needs to be, and I design stuff, and we detail things for other people and so on. But ultimately, I need a team of people to be able to do these things for me, just like, you know, finding someone to help you with an email. But in the making side of stuff as well, you find incredibly creative people, carpenters to all sorts. And I think when you've got all these creatives around in a room, you realize that there's a huge sensitivity to the creative mind. And it's a, it needs to be nurtured. You know, it's my job not just to, you know, wander around seeing that things are being done right or proper, but it's also to encourage each individual. Even if you've got a 50-year-old carpenter that's been doing all his life, he still needs to know that, you know, what he's making is really beautiful. And I think it's about, you know, you're a boss, but someone said to me the other day, the only person that cares about the boss or being the boss is the boss. Actually, the people in everybody else just wants to feel valued by you and by the people they're working with. And I think that's a really important part of my job, is just to make sure on the floor everybody's enjoying what they're doing. You know, we spend all this time in work. And for me, it's really important that the people that are coming to here to work really want to be here. It's not just a job. It's about being part of something. We're trying to improve. We're trying to innovate. We're trying to experiment. And there's, you know, it's you know, it can be strange territory. It's not like we've got one product which we're just stamping out all the time. It's like everything we do is a prototype, or it's something unique or very bespoke stuff. And so there's a challenge there. I think it's just making sure the team feel that they're as much part of that journey as I am.
Yeah. It's so interesting what you're saying about labeling. I mean, we talked a lot about it today, about different labels, from the imposter syndrome to your role to being a boss, CEO, and finding your light. And I so agree with you, is that when we remove those labels and we just relate to each other as people and we can see each other's sort of strength and our differences and work together, well, with your work, it's so beautiful. You can really see how those outcomes shine, you know, and really, you know, my grandmother used to say that when you sew a pillow and you stitch the inside of the pillow with the same craft and with the same details, the outside, the pillow would tend to glow. And I think that's really true about the sort of person too, right? That when you look at those things and you feel that inside, then you really be able to shine around. Guy, you know, what seeds can we plant now in order to grow a stronger community in the future? And you know, physically as well as conceptually, I would love to hear your take on that.
You're asking the wrong person, Gil. I don't. Can I come back to your the labels thing? I've been kind of musing on that a little bit and listening.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, I'd love to live in a world without labels, you know, where we didn't, you know, classify ourselves by our gender, sexuality, whether we're dyslexic, autistic, whatever, you know, age, you know, but we seem to need them. In some ways, I think it gives the oppressed minorities a sort of identity with which they can maybe have some strength and fight back. But mostly, you know, and that can be a good thing. Mostly, I think it's a kind of laziness. I mean, we encounter so many people every day that we have to adopt these kind of shorthands, which perhaps help us to typify people into sort of groups. But, you know, you get put in a box and a pigeonhole, and, you know, it can be really frustrating being in that box and people having decided who you are because you got that label. And I'd love to live in a world without that, you know. And so I think it's great that we support ourselves as dyslexic and identify that it's, you know, it's not a disability. You know, it's definitely can be a superpower, but I don't want to be defined by that.
Right, right. It's very fair, yeah. Dyslexia didn't happen to me. I was born with it. And as like any other skill and any other talent, embracing it sort of allows you to own it and to let it sort of thrive. So I hear you loud and clear.
And I guess maybe it helps us learn from other people as we are this evening, actually, you know, learn how you can deal with it and, you know, and enjoy the benefits of it and perhaps, you know, cope with the downsides. And I don't know. I suppose I'm just, I have some discomfort with it, I guess.
Yeah, I think we just want to change this negative connotation. You know, we've met this wonderful, charismatic, cool, funny, warm, open bunch of people.
They're all here.
but we didn't have a bad experience meeting anyone. And I guess probably you're the same, that you can almost curate your people, can't you? You know, I mean, Holly, you do with the companies that you work with. Maybe it's sort of to do with small businesses and independence and people not are more passionate when it's their own business or when they are part of this business rather than just being part of the corporate machine. I don't know, but I think it's just we just got to be proud of being who we are and not go back to the root of insecurity of what you were made at school.
I think that's the thing with this one, Guy. I completely agree with you in terms of labels and having a label-less society. And I think there's a lot of labels being thrown around at the moment. However, I think with dyslexia, what I was saying earlier on is that it's at a tipping point. You know, it's converging from negative to positive. And I think that's really important for the community of people that have gone through that suffering. I'm reading the feed of all these people that are really frustrated and actually discovery of being dyslexic and the positivities that we're trying to give out is really, really good support for those people.
Yeah. And so I think that's absolutely fair, Dom. And I think my, you know, I was blessed for some reason it didn't hold me back and it didn't affect my confidence. But, you know, I really feel for those, you know, and I could so easily see how it could crush, you know, people.
And, yeah, you know, I think if there's,
to support help them avoid that, then we should.
Yeah, and it's that celebration of, you know, it's a celebration of difference rather than just, you know, looking at a label, if you like.
Yeah. I'll settle for that.
Yeah. Well, do you guys have any tips or any sort of tools or methods that you use that you learn over the years that helps you relate and connect to your community? I know that a lot of people are sort of trying to figure it out both in the workplace, within their sort of interest and community. Any tips or guidance that you can share? Holly, do you have any thoughts?
Well, yeah, I just saw that Louise Allen just asked about how to organise the business day as a dyslexic. I've been always one to, I mean, in my career, I've been surrounded by very many left side of the brain people, as you can imagine, and I would drive them absolutely nuts with my right side of the brain way of dealing with business. One of the things, Louise, I found to be brilliant is something called Trello. And actually, it is a visual to-do list, ultimately. And so for me, being more right side of the brain, dyslexic, et cetera, I like images. So actually, my to-do list is basically image-based, and you can just move things around, and it's super, super easy. I actually built Holly & Co. on it. We run everything. Every project is based on that. The other thing is that, you know, what Holly & Co. is trying to do is really take, the bullshit out of business and actually redefine how we speak about business. You know, for too long, it's been run by, it's been quite alpha, and what I'm trying to do is bring color to gray. And so I think that what's very important as a dyslexic, you can have fun with things. I mean, actually, just the way our brains work, we just instantly do things our way. So, you know, I would have, you know, rooms that were completely whiteboard magnetic so that I could, everything was post-it notes, everything was cut out pictures. Do you know what I mean? It was all visual, and very often it was never in a computer screen. And that was the way that I worked. And funny enough, even though everyone threw their toys out the pram when I suggested it, my goodness, everyone loved it because it was a way of coming together, talking, moving things, being dynamic and coming, you know. And I think that that's what actually dyslexia can give you is a way of bringing things out of the computer screen, out to the world, because you're using words, and it's a part because you're finding it easier. But actually what I found is everybody finds it easier. And so those are my things. And also giving things great names. Do you know what I mean? Like not conforming. You know, your P&L doesn't need to be called a P&L. You know, we call it pears, we call it peaches and lemons. You know, it's very, very sweet with the peaches when we make money, and it's frigging bitter when you don't. So, you know, just have fun with things, because actually I think that that is the confidence that you can get as being a dyslexic. You think differently and just own the way that you think.
I think that not trying to be linear, you're kind of forced on a page to be linear, top to bottom, you know, left to right. Start on the page anywhere you like. I mean, write any word you want, make a picture. And I never make notes when I'm in a meeting like that. I'll just write a couple of words, and I'll ring them, and I'll maybe connect them and whatever. And that works. And I can remember when I was studying, actually, I used to lay it all out on my bedroom floor and have little bits and pieces. I never worked in a conventional way. And that's, you know, so, you know, anyway, that's what worked for me. And you know, really, yeah, not try and do the conventional, you know. God, I mean, trying to absorb information from from text. I suspect that most people find it really hard. I find it absolutely impossible. It's just a useless way of getting things across. I mean, I have, you know, PowerPoint. Oh, my God. I mean, really? I mean, I use PowerPoint, but I only ever show photographs. And when I had to try and convey to, you know, which I happen to think what we do is very beautiful, so people always like that. And when I was trying to convey to staff, now co-owners, how I wanted the business to be run, I did it actually through, I got all this cardboard from the pack house, and I drew silly pictures on it, and I had ropes and hoes and hammers, which were my sort of prompts, and I stood up in front of them, and they all thought I was completely mad. And they're kind of virtually, well, they were virtually in a museum when we finished it, because it refined it through very, and then the cleaner threw them all out, which was a shame, all those beautiful pictures. But yeah, so I think to adopt, you know, and it wakes people up, you know, the idea that you can present them with all this text and they're just going to absorb it. I mean, my God, if they absorb 5% of it, you know, looking at profit and loss, you know, I mean, you know, it's, you know, an accountant maybe have the sort of mind that can absorb information like that, but I don't think many of us have, and I don't think, you know, most of the general population work like that either.
Yeah,
I love the. I wish you had it or a picture of it, because I would love to see it, and I bet you your team and your organization would never forget that presentation. And I think that's really what it's about, like thinking about how to shed the light of the way we do it, to play, to draw on the wall, like Holly was saying. You know, in our agency, everything is physical. Even when we work on the computer, we do research, we print the images, we cut them up, we put them on the wall, because we're able to see through them, which is what dyslexia people can do. And we use the strings to connect them. And then all of a sudden you're in a surrounded room on all four walls, and you're in the center of the thought and the idea. And that is so inspiring. Obviously, to me, that's how I see, but to the rest of the team, I just galvanize their play and brings their strengths.
That was
perfect soundtrack to that inspiration. Dom, as we start to get to the top of the hour, Dom, any other thoughts, any other tools or tips that you use with your team and your community to sort of bring everybody together and help your dyslexia?
Talk. We just talk. You know, I mean, I don't have meetings. We occasionally will have a production meeting, but, you know, I find sitting down having a production meeting and trying to say, well, what's actually, you know, right, we've got to get everything out the door, you know. And we work with big contractors that have got building sites in the centre of London, and they want deadlines, right? They want, you know, you get penalised if you don't have a deadline. And I'm just like, well, look, this stuff is so precious, right? You've got to give it time. And I say to these big contractors, it'll be done when it's done. I mean, it's still precious. But bring that whole anxiety, right, that anxiety of deadlines into a business where you've got all these creative people, just doesn't work. They just, like, you can't say to a craftsperson, hurry up, because it doesn't work. So we just talk it out, and, you know, we make excuses to our stakeholders and say, well, look, you know, if we make beautiful stuff and it takes time. So definitely talking and communication. The communication is the most important thing. And the best way of doing that for me is talking and drawing. I mean, whenever I'm having a meeting, I communicate with drawings. I don't write stuff down, I draw pictures. You know, and then I've been in these meetings with people with notepads and they're writing the whole time, all these notes, especially architects. They're brilliant at it. And they really nice handwriting. And it's like,
beautiful.
You know, I just have it in my head and I've got a few stick men or something, you know, and maybe a picture of a window because we're talking about windows. I don't know. And then I put that back and I know exactly what the whole meeting was about. I don't need to write this right. And then they send it in minutes. Then they send you an email with it all in text. And I'm like, my life is too short to have to do that. So just don't do what you don't want to do. Just do what you really love and what you're good at. And that's what I mean, it's worked for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have a similar things, but because I don't take notes that way, I just learn how to really immensely listen to your point, you know, and really try to hear and be in the present in the moment. And I tend to just remember it. You know, maybe it was just because I was always compensating because I wasn't as skilled at it and I didn't want to sort of put it out there. But I really developed this sort of keen sense of trying to listen not only to the words, but the body language and the dynamic in the room and really seeing that. And as a dyslexic, at least for me, I found that I can kind of get more out of the situation than versus going to the notepad and writing and kind of losing a little bit, not being really in the present, just sort of listen to the ideas, you know. So, well, I know we're at the top of the hour, so I just want to give you each one, you know, if there was one thing that you would to say to your younger self to help through this transition and this challenging time, what would it be? Holly, let's start with you.
It would be that basically I'm enough. You know, that I am absolutely enough, dyslexia and everything. And that it's, that's, you know, everything I used to think was I was never enough. And now I realize that absolutely, you know, it was a gift and I am. And that's what I try and impart with every child that I meet, you know, that they are enough and to find their diamond.
Oh, yeah. Can I say the same thing, but in a slightly different way?
Absolutely.
If it sounds like bullshit, it probably is.
That's
always served me well.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it really, it doesn't work for you, then, you know, reject it.
Yeah, absolutely. Dom, any last thoughts?
So what I would say to my younger self, probably you have no idea how much machinery you're going to have later on. And just be excited about it.
big tool, big toys. I love it. I love it.
Machines, I love machines. Robotic machines, brilliant.
Yeah. Well, this was so inspiring. I want to thank you all so much for sharing your thoughts and sharing your, you know, how you go about building communities and your successes. I want to thank all the audience, Kim, Kathy. You are, you know, the muse to this dyslexia community and bringing all of us together with this amazing, amazing book. If you guys out there haven't got your hands on it, please grab it. There's so many great stories of people in all over different industries making things happen and playing with their big toys. And if you love what you heard here today, please help us raise our content to the top by subscribing to our channel. And you know, our next event, which we're so excited, is coming up on May 20th, where we're going to be challenging the narrative through dyslexia, really rethinking about how we're using dyslexia in the creative way to rethink the name, to rethink the paradigm, and bring a new perspective to it. So please join us on May 20th at 10 a.m. US and 6 p.m. London. And we can't wait to see you all. And thanks again. Any last words, Kim, Kathy, before we part?
Oh, just a massive thank you. We knew it was going to be a good one tonight, and you didn't disappoint. Thanks for your time and for joining us.
We love you.
We love you.
And we want to
thank you. Thanks for bringing us together. Thanks, Gil.
Thank you very much.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Dom, when you want to be indispensable, I want to talk to you. When you really decided you want to, I'll help you.
Anytime. It's lovely to talk to you both off stream, and just, you know, Holly, I think what you've done is incredible. And you know, reading your section in the book, Guy, I think it's what an amazing thing you've done. So
yeah,
humbled to be in your company.
We'll share a glass of wine and a from Riverside.
I can't clap because I got a glass of wine.
Yeah, you're lucky. I'll have one.
Enjoy it. Enjoy it.
And thanks to Gil for hosting. And
my pleasure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Backstage team too. Yeah. And all the dyslexics out there.
Be defiant.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Shine the light.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. Bye. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you to our guests. I hope you enjoy this episode of Dyslexic Design Thinking. We have a lot more great content coming, so make sure to like and subscribe. Dyslexic Design Thinking is produced by Gershoni Creative, created in partnership with Amazing Dyslexics.